Welcome back to Start Kyle Orton. I'm Travis. Kyle is here. And Kyle, there's a reason we start this podcast off with Freddie Mitchell's Same Old Blues every week. And it's weeks like this.
It's not Mad World
by Gary Jules. It's not that.
Dreams in which I'm dying are the best I've ever had.
No, it's a different song. But it's the same vibe. Okay. How you doing? He's already grabbing the eyes. He's pinching the bridge of the nose, and we're off.
All right, let's get the requisite disclaimers out of the way. For one, it's week one.
Yep.
For another, first game, new system, blah, 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 blue.
It's hard to say that blah, shit again, isn't it?
Blibbity, blibbity, blabbity, blibbity. Well, and it's important to check ourselves, too, because what did Kyle and Travis say about the first month of the season, first half of the season?
We said 2022 Lions.
The caveats apply.
Yeah.
But at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck, man. Fuck. Yeah,
that was a hard one. Brutal L for the Bears. My wife comes in and she was really hoping the Bears would win just for, you know, mental health's sake, right? She comes in just as Nashon Wright takes that touchdown in. And she's like, "Well, that's great. That's good. You get to have a nice thing before you go to bed. I'm glad the Bears are doing well. I'll see you in the morning."
That is the hardest part. It really is. It's your loved ones that don't really care about the Bears, but they care about you. And then you sort of feel like you have to, because like Elise did this. My wife did the same thing. She was like, on the opening drive, she was sitting there next to me, super tense. And I was like, "It's all right, hon. You don't need to be this tense." And she goes, "Oh, I don't care about this." She goes, "I just don't want you to be sad."
Yeah.
You know, because I mean, we've joked about, I've talked about it on this podcast, guys. Like, it's okay. I had, you know, I got diagnosed, clinically diagnosed with the depression last year, but let's face it, we all knew old Uncle Kyle got the blues before. It was news to anybody, but, you know, I've gone on a wonderful mental health journey, and I'm on.
And the Bears drug you back into the lava. Is that what you're going to
say? And so here's my poor wife. So, and honestly, that did help me in a lot of ways not react the way I certainly would have in prior times. But I also just be like, "Oh my God, don't make your wife afraid that you're going back into an episode because of the Chicago Bears." So that was my mantra. That was why I refused to let this shit get to me this week. I was like, no. She's going to be worried. She could be worried I'm going back in the hole. I just got to be like, you know, no. So, but, all right, I think we got to start the discussion where we got to start the discussion. Mm-hmm. And it's at Caleb Williams. Obviously, he's going to be the number one topic of conversation.
Don't want to start with the positives. Caleb had some positives.
Here's the thing. I did finally make myself watch the film.
Yeah.
I watched the film. I watched Kurt Warner's analysis of the film. It was funny talking about people who were doing mental health checks. I think Steve, if you guys know The Ringer, if you guys ever read any of the good stuff on The Ringer, it's the descendant of Grantland, one of the last good long form journalism places left on the sports interwebs. Stephen Ruiz, who does the quarterback rankings and stuff for The Ringer. Talk about a mental health check. That guy DM'd me. Usually I DM him with stuff every now and then, but he DM'd me. Like, I woke up Monday morning or Tuesday morning, and I checked Twitter. And there was a DM for me from Stephen Ruiz. He was like, "Look, I watched Caleb's film, and I didn't think it was all that bad." So, I'm like, I think I've got national football columnists worried about my mental.
He's going back to that dark place.
Like, that's a bad sign, I think. So, it's, you know, not that I think Stephen even listens to the Scottcast, but that was touching, really. He's like, "I didn't think it was that bad." He goes, "It was really funny, though, because what he specifically said," he goes, "He's like, I thought the pocket presence looked improved." He's like, "I thought the decision making was great." He's like, "He was getting through his reads." Other than the egregious misses, and I was like, "Okay, but other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the play? Because here's the thing with Caleb Williams, and it's there are two ways that you could look at how he played on Monday, and I'm trying to be one of them, but I'm actually feeling the other. But like the way I would like to be as a rational, and like the way that I think, you know, Nate Tice said the same thing too. Kurt Warner, Steven Ruiz, all these guys saying the same thing, where it's like, look, if you watch him from a process standpoint, it actually did look better than last year. And from a sack avoidance standpoint, I mean, he was smart about when he left the pocket. He did have the Dumbo Trubisky sack where he accidentally stepped out of bounds when he was trying to get a throw off. That was the one time, because he took two sacks. The other sack he took, he didn't have a chance. It was just instant destruction in the pocket, not on him at all. The other sack, which was when he accidentally stepped on the sidelines. So he's got to have a little bit of better awareness there. But otherwise, much better about the sack avoidance, much better about, you know, knowing. We talked in Kansas City, he had that sack where he took the sack because he didn't leave the pocket soon enough. He's forcing himself. And I felt like he was very good in terms of his timing on that. The decision making was fine. It felt like, and Troy Aikman was alluding to on the broadcast, it felt like you were going to turn this tape on and see a lot of turndowns.
Yeah.
And I was afraid of that. But I actually really only saw like two, maybe three that I thought were like clear, you got to throw that, buddy. Some people have been harsher on him than I am, but like Kurt Warner kind of said the same thing. Steven said the same thing. Like really only maybe two. And especially what was encouraging is that one of the turndowns was on a corner route to DJ in the first half. And then in the second half, he threw it and hit him on the same play, same read in the second half. Yeah. So in that same game, you did see some progress there. So the only thing that really concerns you in the end, because I do think for first game in his offense, first game in his second season, decision-making, Brian Flores, all of the no run game. I feel like a lot of people are dismissing that, but like the Bears had a 0% success rate between the tackles on Monday night. Didn't get a single fucking successful 4-yard run off from inside in between the tackles, which is, you know, DeAndre Swift. Normally I would be like, yeah, well, yeah, no shit. But with the upgrades they made on the offensive line, with Ben Johnson's scheme, you'd hope they would find a way to drop a little bit more than that. They didn't. So no run game, and you're consistently in second and third and long versus the fucking hobgoblin Brian Flores. That's not a place where anybody's going to live successfully. So from a process standpoint, most of the things, it did look like progress for Caleb. The only real lingering concern from that game is just how many passes he just fucking missed by a country mile.
Yeah.
And that really concerns me, and I'm having a hard time just being like, eh, that'll go away because I said that last year. It did not concern, it really, really concerned people last year. It did not concern me because rookie year wonkery happens all the time. And I think also a lot of what felt like inaccuracy then, some of that's just a system and a Shane Waldron system that I think had a lot of option routes, had a lot of routes where there were just guys were just kind of ad-libbing and quarterback and wide receiver were never on the same page. So much sloppiness. So many plays where two guys ran basically to the same spot of the field. The inaccuracy scares me now because like we're officially in year two. We're officially in a trend. I can't just dismiss it as rookie year wildness anymore. And it's one of those things where we did this with Justin Fields where it's like one weird trick. And with Justin, it was the turndown specifically. It's like if he could just start throwing it when he sees it, just throw it, he's gonna be great. And he could never cross that bridge. And with Caleb, it's just like he sees it, he's throwing it, just throw it accurately, and then you feel fine. You feel like great. If he hits two of those passes that he misses in that game, you walk away from that game, even though they lost, you'd walk away from that game like, well, it wasn't fucking Caleb Williams' fault. But he did miss them. He's still missing them. And that's one of those things where I'm like, I wouldn't be surprised if it got cleaned up next week. And I also wouldn't be surprised if it kills his career. And that's a hard spot for me to be right now. It's making me nervous.
Yeah. And I would say overall, it's not just that he missed. It's the kind of passes he missed. These were, I mean, honestly, in my opinion, these were worse than Anthony Richardson misses because, yeah, he misses short, but Tony usually misses badly intermediate to deep. And what Caleb was missing was little swing passes, little checkdowns, you know, guys within the first 10 yards, and they were just completely gone. Like,
and yeah, those the were deep not one the to passes. DJ.
The deep one to DJ wasn't.
He missed last year. Caleb was nails on shortstop last year. He was actually like a, he was a top 10. One of the reasons I had a lot of optimism for him is that he was a top 10 PFF graded quarterback on throws 0 to 9 yards last year, which sounds like damning with faint praise, but weirdly enough, that tends to be the stuff that is more stable year to year, is the short passing stuff. And so I was like, he's actually got a strong platform here.
If he just it's so nothing that you can nail the kid with after week one, right? And the pass looked worse, I think, to people was that one to DJ where he changed the route mid-play. Caleb tried to adjust his arm angle, and it looked like, oh, here's Caleb Williams missing another wide-open deep pass, but it was actually DJ opting out of the play that you've already mentioned, that he turned down once and then nailed. He was going to hit him on the same route. It was wide open for DJ. DJ said, fuck it. It's open in the end zone. So he ran to the end zone, which, I mean, look, whether that was good or that was bad, DJ was correct. He was going to be wide open in the end zone, but Caleb was already throwing the ball. So he switches his arm angle, and it's just, it's never going
to
be.
Ryan Fitzpatrick is the one who came out to defend Caleb. Really, I mean, Kurt Warner did the same thing, but Ryan Fitzpatrick really came out to defend Caleb on that specific throw where he was like, Caleb is, he's like, yeah, if Caleb hadn't already started his throwing motion, sure, you'd want him to like reset, hit DJ. But you can watch it on the tape. You can screenshot it however you want. Like, Caleb's feet are lined up towards the sideline. He's getting ready to throw a corner route. His arm is in motion when all of a sudden he's like, oh, shit, DJ. And he's like, Ryan Fitzpatrick literally said, he's like, I would have looked like I was having a fucking seizure if I had tried to, like, if that's, so that one I don't blame him on. Yeah. So that did make me feel a little better.
Because it was the only deep pass Caleb threw all night, and he missed it badly, and we saw that last year. He didn't hit a single damn deep pass last year, it felt like. So watching this, it's scary, but, you know, and that's another thing to say. He threw a lot of short passes. He threw what looked like a lot of checkdowns. Aikman was being very kind to him. He was trying to explain what was going on, but he was having a hard time with the vocabulary, I think. But basically, he just said, there are guys coming open downfield, but I do think Caleb is making the right choice, passing it short to these open receivers. And I think it's just, it's week one in a new offense, you know, and Caleb is just saying, look, this guy is open short. That guy might be open, but maybe I'm not seeing
the I think,
let's take the safe short distance play. And it would work if the run game was working, but the Vikings are one of the best run defenses in the NFL, and it just wasn't.
I really didn't, like, even a couple of the turndowns early on that, like, I was like, ugh. At the same time, it's Brian Flores out there, and the game, the Bears' defense was dominating. You could tell that there was really, this is like, just don't fucking, I mean, and I felt the same way. Like, J.J. McCarthy showed absolutely nothing for three quarters. And I still think, you know, people, I mean, let him have his moment, and I do, I mean, obviously the kid showed some fucking toughness. I do think J.J. McCarthy put some stuff on tape that was pretty concerning there for a while. I don't know, you know, I don't know that he's going to have as great of a year as I would.
We'll talk about what happened in the fourth quarter and why it happened, for sure.
But, no, with Caleb, it's just, there are two throws. I mean, the seam ball to Kmet that he just fucking misses. And then the fourth down throw to DJ in the second quarter.
The fourth of those, that miss was horrendous.
Both of those, clean pocket, he sees it, he moves the backer, they're perfect reads, perfect timing.
Yep.
Like, that's, and both middle of the field. So those are, like, again, even on that thing, there's two encouraging things. Last year we didn't see him target the middle of the field a whole lot.
Yep.
He's targeting the middle of the field on both of those. The timing's good. The read is correct. He misses by a fucking mile. And so it's such a small thing. It's silly that we should have
See
all
me,
this trouble
this
over such a little thing.
This isn't
just
a small
little thing,
thing
Travis.
Yeah,
just a tiny thing. But like, what if he's just not accurate? Like, what if that happens?
I mean, this is one of those things that we say isn't really fixable. You just don't see it get fixed in the NFL. One guy has fixed it, and that guy went to extraordinary lengths that I guarantee Caleb Williams will not go to fix it. Now, the thing is, he wasn't this bad last year. It was 2-3 truly gross passes a game, and that is what you expect from an NFL quarterback. Go watch the Chiefs. Pat Mahomes throws 2 or 3 stupid-looking passes a game, and you say, whatever, he's Patrick Mahomes, he's awesome, right? That's normally within the allowable spectrum. 2-3 bad passes a game. I counted 9 bad misses in this game. That is beyond Anthony Richardson territory for Caleb. You like it just it destroys the offense, and it's the same conversation you had about Tony and Daniel Jones. The coach is going to look at Danny Dimes and say, well, I know that guy will throw it accurately, even if he lacks the arm strength, the athleticism, the ability to make plays off schedule, run out of pocket, and you know, throw that amazing pass that Caleb threw to Rome. And eventually the coach just says, yeah, but I just need the consistency. Like, I just don't care because I don't know what you're going to do play to play. Yeah. So we hope that doesn't continue. And look, Caleb, he says a lot of shit about how he doesn't get nervous. He looked frazzled as fuck on the field in this game.
That I wish he'd never been caught on camera saying that. That's for sure. Because that one will haunt him forever. The same way that Justin Fields is forever being haunted by... What was it in his first preseason where he said where he was like, the game was a lot slower than I expected.
Yep. Yeah.
Which is just the most hilarious quote now in hindsight for a guy who famously has a very slow processor. But like, Caleb, I just like whether you will admit it to yourself, but you get nervous and
you can and tell guess, a I couple mean, times out there. Like if, it's. Oh, you go ahead.
If he follows the same sort of trend he did last year, you know, when you remember how wild he was week one last year and then how he settled in after that, you know, so week one this year certainly looked better than week one last year, I guess. Just doing year to year, we just want to look at week one to week one. But yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where it's like people like. It's really tough for me because it's an if/then right now, because like if. The accuracy was just nerves, jitters, maybe miscommunications that like we know now, I guess, from Ryan Fitzpatrick, especially like the DJ one that looked egregious was a miscommunication. Maybe there were other, you know, he specifically was asked about the one to DJ on fourth down and the one to Combat. So that's why I know from Caleb's own admission, he was like, no, I just missed those. Just put it out too far in front of him.
Yep.
Can't do that. But there was one where he threw a ball that was kind of like he had a guy in the flat and he had a guy and he kind of threw the ball like in between them. Like, and I don't think that was a miss either. Just gut instinct. I feel like that one also probably somebody wasn't where they were supposed to be because he threw it in between two different guys. So somebody made the wrong read or somebody made is my gut on that one. But there were some other misses. But yeah, it's one of those. It's if then. So if the accuracy is just a hiccup thing and he settles in as he did, you know, as the year went along last year, then I think he's going to be fine because I felt like he did from a process standpoint, the reads were pretty good. The pocket movement was fantastic. Did a great job avoiding sacks. Did a great job avoiding pressure. Did a great job knowing when to just, you know, to tuck it and run. He looked faster this year too. You know,
this is a little bit of the issue. I think I
don't
mentioned
know how much
to
I want to
yesterday.
Get into the fucking book, the article or whatever by Ty Dunn and all that. But like, if Caleb didn't hit the weight room much last year, I do feel like this is a guy who looked like did some weight room this offseason, certainly, because he looked like he was in better shape. He looked a lot faster there, for sure.
Yeah, I think speed is still a little bit of an issue. What we saw in the preseason has kind of carried over to the regular season, and Ben Johnson did mention that specifically. You know, we're recording this Wednesday night, but he said he's going to be working with Caleb on his footwork because his footwork's not quite there. He's a little bit too fast. Part of the problem is he's getting through his reads and he's hitting the end of his drop a little too quickly, and he is ahead of each receiver. So suddenly he's sitting back there, he's jittery, and he's half a step early. He has to be calmer.
It's overcompetent because last year he was criticized fairly somewhat very normal for a rookie. Hanging on his first read a little too long.
Yeah.
Last year. So then you overcompensate. And like, that's to me, that is normal young. Like I said, if he hadn't had the egregious misses, it's like Stephen Ruiz said, like I watched the tape and I finally ultimately like if he had just hit a couple of those or if the misses had been inches instead of feet, I walk away from that game. Like, yeah, Caleb's fine. You know, it was for first game in a new system. And a lot of people, you pointed this out. A lot of other people did. Very funny, but statistically almost identical to Jared Goff's first start.
Yep.
Under Ben Johnson.
Look,
like incredibly similar.
Weird false start issues in the first game for the Lions in 2022.
Well, I mean, like the motions, the misdirection, all of that, it does take discipline and reps and timing. Like,
yeah, no. And you know, one of the things we learned from that article, the Bears didn't really use Cadence last year at all. But this year, oh my God, is Caleb using it on every play? And he got almost every one of his offensive linemen to jump. He got the Vikings to jump a couple times. Everybody was jumping at Caleb Williams' cadence. So it takes some time. And yeah, a lot of this stuff is just Ben Johnson's offense is very complex. There's always somebody open in under 3 seconds, right? There's somewhere to go. You just have to know who that's going to be. You got to get through your reads, right? It's complex. It took Jared Goff, who at the time was, you know, a longtime veteran in the NFL, 8 full games to get the whole thing down. And then the Lions started to cook. So you give that some time. But yeah, it's the accuracy, man. There's nothing I could do to assuage anybody's concerns.
Right.
About
it's
that
just
shit.
If then, like if he, if it is, and someone, I guess, longtime friend of the pod, Patrick, he pointed out last year that Caleb had a weird bad throw percentage, like the first 3 weeks last season, and then it settled down to a much more like basically league average from week 3 onward. So it might just be that is just how he starts, that he comes out too amped up, that he takes time to dial it in. So like I said, it's if then. If he settles down, if the accuracy issues go away, then I'm very encouraged about where he's at. But what if they don't? Just what if they don't? If they don't, then. Brother, we're fucked. Like, that's we're right. fucked. If you're feeling that that's where you're at as a Bears fan, where you're just like, I don't want to be here, but I can't escape the feeling that we might be fucked. We might be. If the accuracy does not improve, we might be fucked, brother. Because I already told Travis, I ain't doing this podcast for Tyson fucking Pageant. I'm not doing it.
I'll be here for you. He can have
fucking Nick come on every week. I'm sure the Packers fan would love to be here every week talking about Tyson Pageant with Travis.
That's right.
I'm fucking doing it. So, I'd like to believe Caleb settles in. Likely this offense settles in. I don't think all hope is lost, but you know, I get the unsettling feeling because, like, I figured the accuracy issues would be gone. I really did. And they aren't. I'm a little worried about that.
You expect struggles early in the season, and I mean, it's what we predicted. Struggle for the first half of the season for the offense to put it together. It makes sense.
If he had had the game JJ had, where he looked like total butt because he looked completely baffled for 3 quarters, I'd be a little less concerned because I'd be like, yeah, new offense, Brian Flores, sure. You know, if he threw a pick six because Brian Flores got his goat, that's fine. That's happened to much better quarterbacks than Caleb Williams at this point, like much more experienced quarterbacks. That wouldn't concern me. It's just that, like, he actually did make the right reads mostly. He made the right decisions mostly. And sometimes he just fucking yeeted it. Heated it into the stands, and I'm just, I don't know what to fucking
Cade McNown ass throwing the ball just sometimes, so.
Fucking Jonathan Quinn, drop back and throw it into the stales, and I'm just like, why is this happening?
Yeah, let's,
So I can't tell you, like, I can't tell you that's gonna go away, because I don't know if it's gonna, and I'm pretty scared.
I will leave that decision up to Ben Johnson. I thought his offense looked very good. I thought the run designs looked good. It's just the situation where your running back is DeAndre Swift. Roschon Johnson is out, and you're playing the Vikings defense.
The Vikings defense looked very good. I can't take anything away from them. Their front one, and that is where I am interested in seeing in week two. That's my main concern right now, is I want to see what this offensive line looks like against Detroit week two, because not even Tooney really covered himself in glory in this one, folks. Like Tooney, Dahlman, but especially Jonah Jackson, that interior that was supposed to be a strength, was not in week one. So now I'm hoping that's just because the Vikings have built a pretty good front there. I mean, Javon Hargrave looks healthy and looked like prime Javon Hargrave out there. And that's no shame in that, then, if that's the case. Javon Hargrave's always been a beast. Van Ginkle, you know, that crew, those are good. That's a good defensive line. I think Detroit has a slightly less good defensive line. So I would expect a better performance this week. If not, then we start to get really fucking concerned about how expensive this interior offensive line is and how bad it's looking and how hard it's going to be to fix, because everybody's locked in. You are locked into that interior offensive line, so they got to be a lot fucking better.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, outside
and they need a running
Jackson,
back who can run between the tackles, for the love of God.
I would say outside of Jackson, good pass blocking. Like, they gave Caleb plenty of time. Most of the time when he ran, it was, whoops,
brother,
we're outside
PFF
of 3 seconds.
PFF credited the offensive line with giving up 20 pressures in that game. Did you know that?
My man ran quite often. I think Kurt had a number of plays marked for. You made the wrong decision, but a good thing happened.
Braxton. Caleb,
we didn't talk about this a lot. There was a lot of running from Caleb, which is good in one way. He's very fast. He's very strong. I like to see that. But also, boy, he was really ready to run.
I think that was okay. I think the process was because he did have the really good throw to Rome on the run.
That was fantastic. I mean, everybody's kind of using that to laugh at him.
When I was watching the film, I did not see any play where he scrambled and I thought he should have pulled up and thrown it. I thought he was decisive. And if that is a calibration that he has made already, that's huge because that is where he got himself into some trouble last year. Because it's great that when he takes off, he keeps his eyes downfield. And I felt like even then his eyes were downfield, but he was not drifting behind the line of scrimmage as he sometimes did at USC and he did last year, waiting for someone to come open. He took off towards the line of scrimmage, kept his eyes downfield, but if it didn't, and when it materialized like it did with Rome, he was quick, pulled the trigger, amazing throw. If it didn't, he just took off. And I was okay with that. I really was. I thought that was an improvement from Caleb. Now, PFF credited the defense or the offensive line with quite a few pressures. They had Braxton Jones down for fucking six pressures allowed, which is pretty brutal. And they actually only had Caleb down this game for two pressures that they felt were his fault, which again, huge process improvement from him on that front because he was more responsible for more pressures than pretty much any quarterback last year. So he only stood
in there and threw a couple passes with pressure in his face, which he didn't do last year.
He had a positive EPA. He was like sixth best QB this week in the NFL in terms of EPA versus pressure.
PFF was overall, I think that's the big difference between them and the people who saw that tape negatively, is they had Caleb the very positive rating overall. And yeah, they had the offensive line marked a bit lower. I think they were saying there was a lot more distress being put on Caleb than I necessarily thought. Maybe it's just years of being a Bears fan and expecting that you're going to have some people in your face. I did also watch the Chargers game this weekend, and oh my God, who isn't going to throw for 27 yards per attempt when they have 3 million years standing in a clean pocket like Justin Herbert? Holy shit, the glory of that offensive line, my man.
Everybody doubted Jim Harbaugh for taking Joe Alt over any of those wide receivers, but
a couple times Joe Alt literally just planting his feet and standing as Chris Jones can't move anywhere.
Yeah, no,
Joe Holy Alt, shit.
That's a rare dude. That is this generation's Joe Thomas right there.
Like, yes,
I mean, he's actually on a team where it should matter. God,
that's a Tony Baselli. Let's go back even further. That is a Hall of Fame left tackle.
I mean, don't get me wrong. Watching the film, I didn't think. You know, I'm trying to take into context the Vikings were good at this.
Yes,
they are. I didn't think like Tooney. I wasn't concerned about his performance, but I was like, he didn't. It wasn't like the kind of Joe Tooney performance you go home and write home about. I thought
Tooney and Dolman both. Yeah.
Dolman did not look like Coleman Shelton, but he also didn't look like Frank Ragnow either. And then Jonah Jackson did look like straight butt. Darnell Wright looked our perfect boy, beautiful boy. Had one false start and then had the most ticky-tack bullshit hold of all time, but allowed zero pressures.
Yep.
Braxton Jones, again, I felt like did probably the best that Braxton Jones at this point in time is capable of, where as one of my friends, Robert Schmitz, put it, Braxton has sort of perfected losing with dignity.
He is very good at losing with dignity. Yes.
Where it's like, Caleb, I can give you 2 seconds, but if you need three, roll right, buddy. Roll right. So, like, that's kind of
he will give you the extra chip that you need to run away, which is good.
Yeah, I won't get beat in 1 second. Yep. But I will get beat in 2.25. So roll to the right, brother.
Yes. Feel the pressure from the left side, Caleb.
So, and that's, you know, hopefully as Braxton rounds into form, that'll get better too. And again, trying to keep in context that this is a very good Vikings defensive line. This is Brian Flores. They were doing some good stuff all night long, moving guys around. Definitely. Yeah. I mean,
Look, if we're going to mention Jonah Jackson, at some point we got to have our rant about Ryan Poles here, because that just opens the floodgates for me, this Jonah Jackson.
I mean, well, I don't want to shoot my wad too early on the Ryan Poles thing.
I'm fucking ready to go, buddy.
Well, I'm okay. So we're writing off Jonah Jackson after one. I mean, it was a bad game, but
yes.
One bad game. That's it. That's all you needed.
Is it? It's one bad game. And what happened last season? Like, you and me had this argument before in the offseason, and my perspective was Sean McVay took a look at this guy when he came back and said, "I can't play that motherfucker. I'm gonna play this rookie who's barely done shit, and I'm gonna put him into your spot. I'm gonna try to play Jonah Jackson
very
at center,
good and."
And he couldn't play center, so he benched him and then traded him. It's not positive.
They had a chance to get much cheaper. I don't know. I mean, I'm not – don't get me wrong. I'm willing to. I just like – I feel like if things go south, there's going to be a lot of time for railing on Ryan Poles.
That's
true.
We should start now.
I think that reckoning's coming, and I want to give that reckoning. I want 60 minutes for that, maybe.
Let's seed it here. Jonah Jackson was bad, and that was predictable. And if Jonah Jackson gets benched for a late round rookie for the second season in a row, and we're on the hook for that contract, a contract that replaced the contract we gave to Nate Davis,
that's going to be embarrassing. To be fair, someone much smarter than me that understands explained to me that the Jonah Jackson contract extension that he got was actually, weirdly enough, it was kind of a pay cut, and that they actually can get out of that without much problem. So it's Tooney and Dahlman they're locked into. Jackson they can get out of without too much issue. That's comforting to hear. But yeah, I don't know. I'm not ready to quite write off Jonah either, just because I don't know.
Another guy. If we want to pivot away from offense, because we had some positives in this game. The defense looked very good. But if we want to talk about another guy, we're not writing off yet, but we're just saying Montez Sweat sure looked like the fourth best guy on a four-man starting defensive line.
That was not the game you would really want for Montez Sweat in that situation.
Montez Sweat and Dai Odengbo were switching on and off of a backup left tackle, and Odengbo made him look foolish.
Odengbo looked a lot better. Yes, Odengbo looking better against the backup tackle was not what I expected.
Yep, but the defensive line for the first three quarters looked fantastic. Odengbo, oh my God. I take what I said back, my friend. Like, terrible preseason, bad tape from the Colts sometimes, looked pretty pedestrian. He ran this game. Javon Dexter looked great. Grady Jarrett, incredible. Fountain of youth in the middle there, stopping the run and getting pressure. Just, I mean, they made J.J. McCarthy's life hell for three quarters. If you want to know one neat trick for having a sudden offensive explosion in the fourth quarter, you can just go back to what we said when we signed Dai Odengbo and Grady Jarrett, which was, this works as long as they are always switching out. They are being replaced by Andrew Billings and Chris Williams and, you know, Montez Sweat and Dai Odengbo are moving around. We've got another defensive end maybe who can come in. And instead what we got was an 87% usage rate for Dio, and we got 82% for Grady Jarrett, which can't happen. He is too old for that. And this is what you get when your defensive line is tired in the fourth quarter and your offense can't move the ball. That's it. That's why the running, they had the Vikings stopped for less than 3 yards per carry through three quarters. And then it went up to almost 10 yards per carry in the fourth. Yeah. And if you want to know why, Grady Jarrett last year was the best defensive tackle in the NFL at stopping the run. And he got tired because he had played almost the whole game. And you just can't do that. You can't do that as Dennis Allen. And if you want to talk about Montez Sweat, you got to talk about an interior lineman who is fucking scratched despite being healthy in Shamar Turner, our second round pick, who is unplayable right now.
So PFF had, sorry, I'm going to butcher it, Tano Kapasnon?
Yeah, Pasagnon.
Pasagnon.
They had like him a mythical down. Greek beast.
They had him down for a pass rush win rate of 50% in that game.
Yeah.
Now, that's just on five pass rush snaps. They had Dio down for a pass rush win rate of 16%, which is pretty darn good. They had Javon down for 7.7%, which is not bad for an interior defensive lineman, especially in this scheme. Other than that, though, do you want to guess what they had for the pass rush win rate for Noah Sewell, Jaquan Brisker, Chris Williams, Dominique Robinson, Tremaine Edmonds, Nick McLeod, Montez Sweat, Andrew Billings, Kevin Byard, and Grady Jarrett? That's every other Bears player who logged a single pass rush snap. Do you want to guess what percentage they had for pass rush win rate?
2%?
Zero. Fucking zero. Not a single other Bears player recorded a pressure besides Pasog, Non, Dio, and Jervon.
Jesus.
At least, I mean, there were some pressures, I should say, that were mostly Dennis Allen pressures, basically. So they had, let's see here, they had Dio down for two hurries and a sack, Jervon down for a hurry and a sack. Oof, yeah, not great overall.
Yeah, the problem with Montez Sweat, and the reason I brought it up, is I'm not talking about this like, oh, it's one game. It's all last season.
Right,
and last one season, game.
And last season there was, I felt like, you know, he didn't have a bookend. Mm-hmm. He wasn't healthy. That was clear pretty much from camp last year. He wasn't healthy.
But he had excuses.
This is where it's concerning because, I mean, when the Athletic did their Bears camp check-in, one of the things that, like, they heard from inside Hallis Hall was that Montez Sweat had been having a dominant camp, that mm-hmm. he was looking the best that he's looked in a Bears uniform. And I wanted to buy that at face value. So here I am. I am assuming that Montez Sweat is 100% healthy, and then games like that cannot happen again.
Yeah.
From him, if that's the case. Like, he has got to be better.
The money the Bears have sunk into their defense is somehow in Montez Sweat and Tremaine Edmonds, and I cannot think of a bigger waste of it right now on this team. It is our fourth best lineman, and it is a middle linebacker who I would rather just pay anybody else. Like, Noah Sewell was out there. If you want to bring TJ Edwards back and you put Sewell in that spot, fine.
Sewell did look quite good. I was surprised by that.
Yep.
So.
Right up until he got beat by Aaron Jones in the fourth quarter, because, again, guess what? Our GM drafted a linebacker who can't play fucking linebacker in the NFL. So Noah Sewell didn't have anybody to spell him. So he's tired in the fourth quarter. Yeah. We have a defense that is going to be good for three quarters and then get crushed in the fourth because there's nobody to bail them out.
Yeah. I mean, and things should get better from here, you would hope. It sounds like Jalen Johnson should absolutely be ready week two. Kyler Gordon, maybe. And I do think
all
at some point
we have to credit in the world to those corners for holding up.
We have to, at some point, I feel like we have to note that, like, I'm a little iffy as far as Ryan Poles giving Kyler Gordon an extension when the dude cannot stay healthy.
Yeah.
Just cannot freaking stay healthy. I love him, but God. You know,
yeah.
But things on the defensive side, you would think hopefully after you're getting Austin Booker back at some point to hopefully add a little bit to your rotation so you can keep guys fresher. Shamar Turner being a healthy scratch, I get it after camp, but like that is a guy that at some point is going to need to be at least part of a rotation because yes, we have to be able to keep. And Travis, did you see Grady Jarrett?
It's a second-round pick, man.
Did you see Grady Jarrett did not participate in practice today? My dude's on the injury report, so I really don't know what their defensive line looks like if they don't have any Grady Jarrett.
I wonder why Grady Jarrett's on the fucking injury report. I wonder if it's shit. Because you played him too much in that game.
Might be. So, yeah, right. I mean, so really, like, that's...
We didn't even get to it. Andrew Billings did not look good. It looks like the reports about Billings having a lot of issues might be true. He looked slow. He didn't get any pressure. He was having trouble stopping the run, which he's usually very reliable with.
I mean, he's not in game shape, and that was... I mean, and I don't blame him for that necessarily. I mean, that was a brutal injury that he would come... There was a lot of concern that he wouldn't come back 100% from that. So far, he hasn't. That's definitely... There's... And I credit again to Dennis Allen. He did Dennis Allen stuff. He, you know, they kept them in it for if the offense had been able to pick up a couple first downs in the second half, that would have been a Dennis Allen.
If the offense had anything going between the first drive and a garbage time touchdown, that none of this matters. Like one more touchdown in there, and who cares?
I mean, honest to God, man, I think if Cairo makes that fucking field goal, none of this probably matters. Like that's the dark side of it. Like that's Cairo Santos is something we have to talk about. Actually, let's talk about special teams. We don't need to talk about special teams.
Special teams was awful.
Cairo Santos. Like, why is it that in a league now where almost every fucking kicker is automatic from 55 plus, the Bears have managed to get the Shane Matthews of kickers. Like, we have the only kicker in the NFL right now that you wouldn't even think really of attempting a 56 yarder with. And then at that point, like, fine. Then the argument there is, well, he's nails from under 50, but he's not.
Yeah.
He's not. That's really frustrating. And then also, I put this reckoning off long enough, but Travis, you're fucking overrated, overdrafted, 30-year-old kangaroo piece of shit punter. Fucking sucks, brother. He does.
I'm pinning that
entirely
punts
on you. I'm pinning that. It's your fucking fault.
Kyle, I'd have taken him with the first round pick.
He was, right? He was a league average punter last year in terms of net and gross punting average. In terms of, he was below average actually in terms of inside 20 percentage. And then last night he was, I think I sent you the punter EPA chart, right? What was he, like third or fourth worst punter performance in the NFL this week?
It was bad punting performance.
And this was a
punter. Now I will say this. Not necessarily in defense of Torrey or in defense of the pick. Right. Obviously.
Son of a bitch. You always
obviously Ryan Poles fucked up. I think he's fucked up everything at this point. I don't think there's much we can defend of Ryan Poles because now, all of his chickens have come home to roost.
So many.
Guys, they're been roosting. Kind because we're like, wait it out. We don't want to say anything until it's truly bad. It's bad now. But
It's so funny. I get yelled at on Twitter. I get it from both sides because, like, I get people, for whatever reason, like, Bears Twitter, like, there are still far too many people that are on the King Poles shit. And, like, if you criticize him at all, they're up your ass. And then I've been in DMs and stuff where it's like, if you say that Ryan Poles isn't I was told I was coping before draft night this year, because I was like, I don't think the Jaunty trade up makes any sense just based on how Ryan Poles operates. They're like, oh, you don't think he's that fucking stupid? And I'm like, no, I do think he's that. I think he's that level of stupid, but I don't think he's that's not his kind of stupid. Right. Ruben, like we talked about, Ruben Hippolyte is his kind of stupid.
That's Ryan Poles.
That's his kind of stupid. But
Shamar Turner, Zach Pickens, his stupid.
It's funny because, you know, again, don't want to spend a whole lot of time on that article. I would prefer it to just fade into dust at this point, but everybody else has said their piece about it. But the Caleb Williams stuff in that article, I felt very much was a coaching staff with an axe to grind. A lot of people who are always going to hate Caleb Williams, there are people that really want to call him a slur that starts with an F and can't. There's a lot of that in the Caleb Williams part of that article, which isn't to say that I think it's all false. I think almost every anecdote told in that article about Caleb Williams is probably true from a certain point of view, to go Obi-Wan Kenobi here. I think most of the anecdotes, but I also think most of those anecdotes, they kind of did the Bobby Newport where it's entirely like, whether that is an anecdote, a harmless anecdote about a rookie who is adjusting to the NFL, or a malicious anecdote about a gay Johnny Manziel, Jamarcus Russell hybrid, entirely depends on how nasty you want to say it. Because if Bobby Newport's never had to work a day in his life, like, no doubt the coaching staff that got fired for failing to develop Caleb Williams thinks that the real problem is that Caleb Williams didn't put in the work. Caleb Williams has even said, like, I always thought I worked hard. I didn't understand until recently what hard work in the NFL actually looks like. The Caleb Williams stuff is what it is. The Ryan Poles stuff, I'm more inclined to believe, not because it lines up with my biases or whatever. It's the stuff that was mentioned about Ryan Poles in there lines up a lot more with what's observable in his record. And so that when people are like, scouts in the building felt that Ryan Poles focused too much on athletic traits and not enough on guys who can actually play football. And I was like, no shit. You need a hard hitting expose for that? Like, Valus Jones happened, guys. That's a matter of public record. So I get it.
How did we get here from special teams? I don't know what happened to even get to this point.
You said Ryan Poles, we've been too kind to him. And I'm like, yeah, we have. And what's funny, we've been too kind on him simply by saying we have steered a middle ground on Ryan Poles all along.
Yes.
I think. And nobody in sports ever likes to linger in the middle ground. But like, we've always been like, I don't know. I can see the plan here. It all depends on if it works. And I think we're really in the junction point where you're just like, this plan really might not fucking work right now, man. And if it doesn't work, you have fucked us to the core with the amount of advantages that you blew to get us to this specific spot with this specific roster, with this coach, with this quarterback. It's got to work. Or you have torpedoed this franchise to a degree that we maybe have never been torpedoed before. Yeah. And I wandered off into the Himalayas and vanished for 3 years. Travis was watching football alone while I was on
it. It was very sad. It was sad days,
because
guys.
Of Mark Trestman and Phil Emery. So if I'm saying it's that bad again, potentially, that's how you know we're in a dark place.
Yeah. Anyway, special teams.
Special
Corey
teams.
Taylor punting.
They were not
Kyle,
special.
Do you know which coordinator the Bears decided to keep inexplicably?
They did keep Richard Hightower.
Richard fucking Hightower. Hey, what happened last year with special teams, Kyle? Was there anything notably stupid about the special teams last year? Hey, have our special teams been bad for the last 4 years?
Yeah, and I want to say
weird.
I want to say special teams coordinators don't matter this much, but we are children of Dave Tope. Like, he was ours first.
We know that they do
we
matter.
We know that they matter.
Here's what it looks like to me as a punting aficionado, because for the love of fucking God, I have to watch the Hawkeyes every Saturday. He is telling Torrey Taylor, kick ball far. And Torrey is booming the fuck out of the ball. And then he's out kicking the coverage completely. And then the returner is always getting 10 to 20 yards on the return. They kept saying the Vikings returner was having a good night. No, he fucking wasn't. This happens every time we play because Torrey kicks the ball really fucking far. And then the returner gets a decent return, and that kind of levels it up. It doesn't seem like there's any plan beyond that for the Bears. It doesn't seem like there is any. It doesn't seem like there are plays. I don't think they're running special teams plays, which is the problem we had last year with the field goal. They didn't have a strategy for kicking field goals. They just went out there and ran the same shit. And that's why other teams knew what they could do to block field goals. And they did. And then what did they do? They did it again. Because this guy doesn't know what he's fucking doing. And he's proven it over and over again. I have no idea why Ben Johnson kept him around. Like, did he watch what happened with the Bears last year? Did he not fucking see that? What did Richard Hightower tell him happened? Oh, I'm sorry. I don't actually fucking do anything here, Ben. You gotta keep me on, buddy. Huck,
how
huck,
important
huck.
Is a special teams coordinator, Ben? I'm just a really likable
right.
guy.
Dude,
and that is what I've heard is that
I know where
like
all
Richard
the good
Hightower
food is.
Just a fantastic dude, and everybody really loves him as a human being. There are worse reasons to be retained, but yeah,
he is trash, and he needs to be fired yesterday.
But
that's
I will say,
opinion.
I don't
but
think Richard Hightower is the reason that Torrey can't coffin kick right now either.
I will say this about Torrey.
You don't have to outkick your, like, it doesn't matter what your coverage is doing, Travis, to fucking pin someone inside the 20 through a corner kick, and he can't, like, it's not been pretty. I will say that this is about special teams too, though, and this apparently was Ben Johnson's fault that he's got to own. Who among them thought, oh yeah, Cairo can kick it through the back of the end zone? He's got the leg for that.
So I looked into this, all right, because
who the fuck thought that could happen?
The first thing I said was, why didn't you just kick it out of bounds, you fucking idiot? And what I learned is they updated the rule. If you kick it out of bounds now, the other team can decide to make you re-kick 5 yards back. So that wouldn't have worked, all right? You can't kick the ball out of bounds. That is now that O'Connell would have been like, great, now Cairo really can't kick it out of the back of the end zone. Apparently what happened is Ben went up to Cairo and went up to Richard fucking Hightower, and he said, can he kick it out of the back of the end zone? And they said, oh yeah, absolutely, no problem. And so he said, sure. He says he can do it, and he could not fucking do it because he's Cairo Santos. Apparently, what Richard Hightower told him later is, well, he did it, but I think he had the wind. Fuck you, Hightower.
Jesus.
Leave the team for put. You know who can kick it out of the back of the end zone? I've seen him do it. Torrey Taylor. Just let him kick it.
That was my first thought. I was like, why isn't Torrey Taylor taking the kick? Like,
but yeah, I mean, the decision was.
I mean, he probably would have fucked it up because he's a piece of shit and he sucks and he.
My poor Australian punter.
The Ryan Leaf of punters. I mean, the fucking.
Look, Kyle. At this point, fuck every
the
draft
glittering
pick
gazelle of
ever
punters
made. That's
can
not
sashay
Javon
his ass
or Darnell
back to Australia. As far as I'm concerned,
Torrey got that fourth round punt money, and now he's gonna sashay back to Australia.
Call yeah. it Bory Taylor, because I'm fucking tired of watching him kick those shitty ass punts.
What do we want to see from this Lions game? For me, the only thing I want to see from the offense, little bits of improvement. I don't expect them to go out there and blow the doors off. I just want to see improvement.
I would just like to mutter, Jesus Christ, Caleb, less than 5 times.
Yes.
In this game.
Yeah.
I'm giving him 5. You get 5 Jesus Christ, Caleb.
5 down from 9.
5 down from 9. Next week we're going to go do 3.
2 or 3.
All right.
That's where we
By week it. 8, by week 8 you're going to be down to 1 Jesus Christ per game, okay? That's it.
I love it.
Tough love. So I don't know. I tried to approach Monday night with no expectations. I'm trying to approach this season with no expectations. Yeah. We don't know what this team is yet. We're not going to know for a while. But like, and in fact, if you told me before the game started, like, hey, here's Caleb's box score, here's the final score, it's 27-24, I'd have been like, you know what, it's probably fine.
Yeah.
But boy, as usual with the Bears, the method at which they arrived at that destination,
yeah,
the worst possible way they could do it, pretty much. So yeah, I don't know. I just would like to. I would like to believe that my number one overall pick quarterback is capable of throwing a football accurately.
Yeah.
That's really where I'm at. That's what a wonderful world we're at here.
I would love to do what I did all last year and identify a specific matchup that is favorable for the Bears and one that's really favorable for the Lions. What's this game going to hinge on? But after that first game, it's so difficult to say what the Bears offense is going to.
I would like to see the Bears, the
onus is on execution for the Bears right now.
Yeah. I mean, if we're talking about things that have long-term repercussions that I'm really worried about, I want to see Caleb be a bit more accurate, but also the interior offensive line needs to look a lot better. If they look bad 2 games in a row, I'm going to get real fucking nervous, because this should not be happening again. Dahlman has to be better than that. Tooney has to be good. Jackson has to be better than that. I'm going to be real fuck. I mean, that's a real throw up your hands. I don't know what to fucking do. If the interior of this offensive line still sucks, it's a brutal, brutal thing.
I hate to sound like Nick here. But there's a thought running through my head that's like, what if Joe Tooney's just old and Dahlman can't save an entire interior offensive line, and Jonah Jackson really is just as bad as that last year seemed? Like, is that hard to believe? Because Falcons fans, the second we paid Drew Dahlman, I saw a lot of Falcons fans that were like, yeah, that's fine. And I saw a lot of wisecracks that were like, ooh, sounds like Drew Dahlman can just save your interior offensive line. I guess they should have told us that the last few years. And I was like, I don't love that.
I mean, I have never thought Drew Dahlman was like an elite pass protecting center. Yeah. And I said that when they signed him. And I don't think he looked terrible in that game as a pass protector anyway. I thought he looked fine. My bigger concern is that I do think he was a very good run blocking center in Atlanta, and he didn't look like that. Now, again, that Vikings defensive line looks good. Javon Hargrave looks healthy, and he's a beast when he's healthy. I really fucking like what the Vikings do on defense. I mean, what Brian Flores does with it. Like, so I'm willing, like, if it's just that game and it's just the Vikings, you know, like, fine. Like, that. But that's what I'm watching against Detroit, because this is a good, not elite Detroit defensive line. I want to see them look considerably better, run the ball considerably better. And again, Caleb under 5, Jesus Christ. That's where we're at right now.
Yeah, every day that
you
the Dolphins...
Title, you can title the episode that, under 5, Jesus Christ. Like, let's do that for this week.
Every day the Dolphins exist this season, I think Brian Flores looks a little bit better.
Absolutely.
A little bit more sunshine and rainbows over Brian Flores' head.
I said that the first 2 years everyone was like, why is it when Mike McDaniel goes 9-8 but does it offensively, it's like, wow, this is the culture change the Dolphins needed. But I'm like, the last guy was 9-8 too.
Yeah.
He just did it with a good defense, and he didn't care about Tua's ego. Like, that's all there is to it.
It's all right, Brian. You're going to get a new head coaching job somewhere, and I hope it works out a lot better for you. Should we got like 5 minutes. You want to talk about Daniel Jones's day, Kyle?
Fuck you. Just let's,
do you want to talk
call
about
it early. I'm not,
how good I'm not, Daniel Jones looked? Are you scared? Are you a little worried at this point, or is that just the Dolphins?
I think it's about 50% the Dolphins, about 50% the fact that, I mean, I was saying, I think the Colts, I think the Colts have an incredibly deep offense. Yeah. Like that they've got four good wide receivers and Tyler Warren. Like, I would hope if Daniel Jones could make it look good. And it's not like this is Daniel Jones has done this before in Brian Daboll's offense, and they had a lot fewer weapons. So I'm not surprised that Daniel Jones can execute this somewhat. Now, we talked about this. I do wonder if Daniel Jones can pull what I like to call the Fitzmagic trick, where you, on two different occasions, have a much better year than anyone expects year one of a regime, get paid, and then immediately fall back to earth year two, now that you're an expensive journeyman. So that's where he has a chance to cross over the Alex Smith event horizon, but also become only the second guy to pull the Fitzmagic trick. And that would really be impressive.
Absolutely. I love to see journeymen quarterbacks just get paid outrageous sums of money because
we love Vinny Testaverde.
Talent all around him and shit.
Vinny Testaverde. It's probably a disservice to him to call it the Fitzmagic trick because Vinny did this. I mean, the Jets paid Vinny. The Ravens paid him. Mm-hmm. The Browns paid him. Like, Vinny got paid multiple times and always had one good year followed by a turd. We loved that about him. Week one, certainly off to a good start for the Alex Smith Event Horizon candidate, that's for sure.
I expect all of you to go out into the wild and tell somebody about the Alex Smith Event Horizon
really apologize to whichever one of you said that on Twitter, that I've already forgotten who you were. But yes, I showed Travis the screenshot of whichever one of you says that. I have come dangerously close to saying the Alex Smith Event Horizon in real conversation without realizing I wouldn't be able to explain where it came from. And that's the highest honor Travis could ever receive.
Yes.
Travis, do you want to mention in the pod that there is a Discord? There's a Discord now?
There is a Discord now. If you guys, if you send me a pizza roll in the email inbox, and I will send you a link to the Discord.
I'm not just going to like tweet it out for all the crazies, but if you are dedicated enough, Scotthead, to be here at the end of an episode, you want to email Travis on the official Star Kyle Orton Gmail or whatever, and you want to ask for the Discord link, we'll get you in there. Our good buddy Nick is already in there. You have to deal with one smug Packer fan. That's the price for admission.
That's right. We have had inquiries about it because Kyle and I have been joking about having.
I've been joking
Discord,
the whole time, yeah,
but it didn't exist. But you guys
it's
have
never
been emailing.
Existed, but there have been multiple people who have thought that we were being serious.
Yeah,
that we were gatekeeping the Discord, and so I was like, now I feel kind of bad. Like, do we just have it? And also, I mean, let's face it. With my mental health being what it is, I spend a lot less time on Twitter. I got a couple thoughts off, just popped them off right after the game was over Monday night, and then I haven't been on hardly since because I don't fucking need the circular firing squad that is Bears Twitter after losses. So if this season gets grim, I am not hanging out in that environment. So if you still want our thoughts, besides just the hour that you get to hear them auditorially, orally, just if you want our thoughts orally and via text, via messages sent directly to your phones late at night, email Travis. He'll give you the link to the Discord.
I like how it's email Travis. I do manage the email.
I don't even have the password.
Kyle, I'll tell you the password right after this.
I couldn't check the Gmail if I tried.
That's true. Well, so, if you go in there, I mean, and you say the right words, it will open for you.
Okay.
Yeah. So. All right. Well, I hope we're here next week and we can say, well, we lost again, but it was pretty cool. This time.
I love that's our favorite. We're not even talking about winning. We're just like, I hope next week we lose in less depressing fashion. That's I love right. that we're here week two already. God damn. What a Bears podcast. Yes.
Say bold blue.
Here's a shit.
Now you know I'm leaving Chicago, and people I sure do hate to go. Now you know I'm leaving.